Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to Between the Ones and the Zeros, where leadership meets technology and we explore that messy, meaningful space in between. I'm your host, Anthony Piccolo, founder of Performance Scoring, and a firm believer that leadership isn't just about outcomes. It's about people, systems, and decisions we make when no one's watching.
And I'm Dr. Chichi, leadership coach. I'm proud author and proud girl mom. Here at Between the Ones and Zeros, we bridge heart and hardware. Because no matter how advanced technology becomes, leadership will always be deeply human.
Yeah, today's guest is a leader whose story is built on courage, adaptability, and purpose. Andrea Perez is the superintendent of Basis Charter Schools in Texas, and she's nearing completion of her doctorate in clinical psychology. Her path to leadership didn't always follow a straight line, and that's what makes it so relatable. She graduated from Point Park University, with a BSBA in 2007, started her career with a Fortune 500 company, and quickly rose into leadership. I believe, and if I'm not mistaken, Andrea, I think you were the youngest person ever to serve in that supervisor role at that company.
Yep, that's correct.
And that career eventually brought her to San Antonio. And after becoming a mom, Andrea made a bold pivot into education, joining the team that opened the first Great Hearts campus in Texas. From there, her operational leadership and heart for students took her to Basis, where she serves as this district administrator under the superintendent.
Yeah, and then in 2019, when the superintendent resigned, the board unanimously appointed Andrea as superintendent. Under her leadership, Basis has opened 15 new campuses, with two more opening the next school district the next school year, and the district has maintained a strong A rating. And Andrea, I also think you're one of the youngest superintendents of a district in Texas ever.
Thanks.
And along the way, Andrea fell in love with special education, which inspired her to pursue her doctorate in clinical psychology. Her long-term vision is to bring education and psychology together to better advocate for underdeserved population. Andrea, all but dissertation, congratulations, that's not an easy feat. This conversation is about leadership under pressure, leading through growth, and how to stay human while building systems that scale.
Yeah, Andrea, we're so thankful for you joining us today, and your career path, your career arc fits beautifully in what we're doing here at Between the Zeros and Ones. And your career spans the corporate leadership spans corporate leadership and education. And when you hear the word leadership, Andrea, what does it mean to you today after all those chapters in these different industries, working with different stakeholders and clients or students?
I think that leadership is all about being willing to take risks and step outside of yourself and your comfort zone to start a movement. Yeah. Wherever you are, you're creating your own movement within that organization, adapting it to what your goals and visions are while aligning those with the existing goals of that company.
Absolutely.
Willing to take risks. Your bio shows the risks you're taking. How does somebody become a mom and then decide to switch careers?
Education had always been in my heart. My grandparents were both educators in a very low-income district. So growing up, I got to go to school with them and sit in the classroom and observe them. Outside of that, we're in a very small town in Pennsylvania, and their former students would approach them. We couldn't go to the store or the mall without two or three coming up to either one of them and saying, "You changed my life. I am who I am because of you." And even from a young age, I recognized as being so powerful. And, you know, they always say, if you can touch one person, you've made a difference. I think my grandparents touched thousands. They just had students everywhere. And unfortunately, my grandfather passed away several years ago, but the students that showed up for him in remembrance of him just really honored what his mission was in life as an educator. And so after becoming a mom and having worked the corporate world and done all those things, I really wanted to be family focused, but not lose myself and my interests and my goals as an individual. And when the opportunity arose, I jumped in and started education.
Wow, that is so awesome. And you know, being a leader at such a young age too, I can relate in my career, especially the movement between industries and as you became the youngest supervisor at that Fortune 500 company earlier in your career, what did leadership teach you at that stage? And do you see it differently now? Has it changed? Has it changed you?
Yes, I was very young. I was 22 years old. So I was fresh out of college and I'd started in an internship program that was brand new to the company. And there was a supervisor that left very suddenly. And I stepped right in and said, I'd be willing to take on that team in the interim and gain the experience of being in that role. And if you like what I offer, then I'll be glad to stay. And I guess they liked what I had to offer, so they let me stay. And I grew out that company, which brought me here to San Antonio. The leadership was very diverse there. So you had a manager above you, and then, of course, the director and a vice president. So I interfaced with a lot of different types of leaders. And coming out of college, everything you're doing is learning. You're observing other people and figuring out what you love and what you hate about these jobs, what you should and shouldn't do. And I quickly learned from that point that everything is about staying humble and being empathetic to your people. So you don't just become a supervisor and forget what it was to work the day-to-day in the desk. You're in the tall walled cubicle, but you should be on the floor and really live their experience so you can do your job effectively. And that stayed with me up until now. So everything as a superintendent, I might not interface with the children as much or the parents that I did when I was working in the schools, but I still need to know what those teachers' experiences are and continue to advocate for them.
Absolutely.
There's a couple of words you've used that I like to pull on. The first two is my interpretation of what you said. One is opportunity and readiness. A supervisor left, opportunity, and you stepped in, readiness. And then you said you've been learning and you're talking about humility and empathy. When you look at leadership, all of four of those become important ingredients in becoming a leader. Tell me how you work these four together.
Great question. And I think, you know, we've talked before, it's a pendulum as a leader, where on one side, there is this self-efficacy and grit. I can do that and I'm ready to go and I'm going to go in. And then you do it. And you swing to the other side, and that's where you sit with imposter syndrome and what now and panic. And finding that balance is really important. And I think being on both sides of that helps you to pursue opportunities. So that's when you're in the self-efficacy and the grit mode and you're saying, okay, I can do it and I'm ready. And you see an opportunity and you're comfortable with rejection. Okay, I might not get this job, or they might say it's not your time yet. And that's okay, because I can take constructive criticism and I know I tried. And then on the other side with this imposter syndrome, okay, now I'm the superintendent of a school district. And what does that mean? And what do I do with this? How did I get here? It's the balance, and that's the humble. So you're working through, how do I be the best for everybody involved and stay true to myself and my values and lead people? So just constantly keeping yourself in check is really important for all of those opportunities.
When I was coming up, I too was a leader at a young age. I wasn't the captain of any of my sports teams growing up. I wasn't a young leader in grade school. And when I left in college, I became somewhat of a leader in where I was. But when I stepped into the real world and I started progressing. And I wouldn't say that I progressed to be the youngest in my company in that role like you were, Andrea. But and you spoke just a minute ago about the imposter syndrome, and I remember feeling that myself, especially being young, working with people twice my age that could be my parents or even my grandparents, and those people are asking my advice soon. Relying on me. And then I had to look in the mirror, you know, every day and go, you know, am I the right guy? Is this the right thing? You know, what do they think about me? Tell me about, like, as you worked through that being a young leader, you know, kind of fighting some of that natural position. And then obviously the elephant in the room is you're also a woman too. And, you know, growing up, you know, your leadership role in a position of power, how did all that confluence of all of those different factors affect your leadership and how you grew and how you projected yourself amongst your peers and your subordinates?
I think that I've really developed a thick skin over time, and I would bounce ideas off of my family or friends. How do I sound when I give this presentation? I rehearsed everything. I dressed the part, you know, getting the right haircut and putting on the right clothes. And I did a lot of things early on to make myself look older, because in your 20s, I felt like despite my title, people would never quite take me seriously. And then as I got into my 30s and moved into different positions, then I said, it's really not just that. It's about how you carry yourself and your willingness to prove yourself every time you walk into a room, whether at the school level when it was with parents or if it was with my superiors from the district office. It's how you present yourself to those that you're working with. And for me, it was reading, just constantly reading, being knowledgeable, taking notes, never stop learning, and being prepared, because there are people that do want to have a gotcha moment, but other people just want to have an intelligent conversation with you and know that you understand their interests or their situation. So having that bank of knowledge and something to default to has really helped me engage with everyone around me.
I'm going to pull a little bit more on that imposter syndrome. It's a topic I've dealt with women of all ages and all levels. And it shocks me still today that women that have been in leadership for decades still have imposter syndrome. So you, at a young age, stepping into leadership, and some people would expect you to have that imposter syndrome because of your age and your years of experience. How did you overcome it? And what would you advise women today at every level of leadership on how to deal with that imposter syndrome? You gave a couple of examples, read, presentation, but what is the key thing that helped you and you will advise others on?
As far as being a woman and allowing that to influence, it's the natural nurturing side that we have. So when you're connecting with your people, you genuinely have a heart for what you're doing, but for these people, and you can identify your team. You know, you can see people who might be a little timid and push them into greatness in that respectful and loving way. You can see people who are very satisfied with, I want to work 9 to 5 and go home to my family and never be called again. I don't want to move to management. I'm great where I'm at. And I'm finding ways to develop them. And so using those gifts and that kind of nurturing spirit towards your people keeps you motivated because it's no longer about you. I'm putting everybody ahead of myself. I want to see them succeed. I've reached this really great place in my life, and I'm going to stay there and protect my people and develop them and help make other leaders out of this situation.
So you're saying embracing your nurturing side as a woman helps you overcome imposter syndrome?
I do, because I think my desire to help others outweighs my fear of accepting who I am in this career field.
So that brings me to something else. I need to put this all the way through because you touch on a lot of things that women are facing. You said that you had to get a thick skin, mm-hmm. right? And unfortunately, we still live in a world where when a man does something, is described another way. So a man with a thick skin is a beautiful thing. A woman with a thick skin is, why are you being masculine? So how you balance this thick skin with the nurturing side and still maintain yourself?
It's allowing yourself to feel one thing and project another. So I can feel hurt or knocked down, but I'm going into that room to project confidence and stability and showcase my knowledge, because no one can take away your knowledge. No one can take away grace as you present yourself in a room, rather than anger or overreact. That's not to say I never overreact. Of course I do. I have emotions.
Oh, you're a person too?
Yeah, I'm a person. I'm a passionate person. But I take from other great women in these roles and mimic what I see. I've seen them. Okay, instead of being, it's on my face and I'm mad and this didn't work out, how they say, can you tell me a little bit more why this happened? And so you're holding a line without being aggressive. So just keeping that balance in how you feel versus what you put out.
Another way I put that is hold your secret. Keep your secret. They don't need to know.
It's yours.
What do I need to know?
Well, so like, I'm so intrigued on this. So like in 2019, right? So you were unanimously appointed superintendent, and I just can't imagine that moment, the weight of it. So what was the weight of that moment like, and how did you ground yourself like stepping into that role? Was it awesome? Was it euphoric, or was it like kind of matter of fact, like, okay, now I guess I got to get to work. Walk us through kind of how that was for you.
That was when I had spent so much time preparing for it, because there were several months where we had an interim superintendent, which was one of the board members, and we were figuring out what to do. And I knew my strengths, which were really the research end of it and compliance, government relations, those kinds of things. But when it came to the more public part of the job, I was very timid. I'm still a little shy on those areas and reserved. And I thought, oh gosh, I don't know. And there's a lot of growth happening, a lot of change in education. There is a lot of support needed. And so I went through this period of working with our board to define what I had an interest in doing and a willingness to do, and yeah, also what my needs were, and being very honest. And I think as we talk about leadership, that's a really important quality, is honesty, that you can say, I don't like this, or I'm not great at this. I'm willing to work to become great at it, but it's not my world. And so I was very fortunate that the board also appointed an executive director. We had kind of split the role, and my partner in the district office now has been with me. We were appointed at the same time, and he's been fantastic, very supportive. And we just lift each other all the time, pushing each other into the areas. Like I said, for me, it's public speaking, and he'll, you know, it's your turn to do it. You have to do it and go. But I think having him brought on at the same time was a source of comfort for me. So I was able to enjoy that moment and say, I can't believe this is happening, and I'm really excited to do great things that have been needed to be done here, but also to have this supportive partner that will balance out the parts of me that I'm still working on.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to switch it a little bit. This is between the ones and zeros, after all. So you've done a lot of this leveling as you go. What source of technology or what helped you stay sane and stay consistent?
A lot of different things. So I think in the career field, you have, first of all, professionally for me, I have ADHD, so it's hard for me to remember things, and I'm pulled in a million different directions. So using assistive technology, especially things that we even use in the classroom with our students with disabilities, things to keep you on track and organized, that's definitely helpful. Research, everything I do is research-based. So all of these different tools, sorting articles that I'm reading and saving things, having this bank of information that I can really code and easily access the information that I need. Because like I said, we're always learning, we're always growing, and you need to reference things later. So that was very helpful. In the personal, just a way to unwind and connect with friends long distance, or I'm in psychology. We believe in weekly therapy, talk to your therapist. So having someone that no matter where I'm at, I can have a session and talk to someone, and here's where I'm struggling this week or what's going on. That's definitely a very powerful tool.
Yeah. Part of being a great leader is giving good quality feedback and receiving that feedback as well. What kind of tools, or how do you give and receive feedback to your staff, and how do you expect your staff to give and receive feedback, both positive and maybe a little bit more on the critique side?
There are a lot of really great coaching tools available now that you can use to connect with your staff. For us, we use Teams a lot. We're not in the same space all the time, especially with so many campuses and different offices. We're in different states, some of the staff. And so having these resources where we can work together on a document and go over it and say, okay, here are our goals, and here's where we met or we didn't meet. Here's our agendas. Everything is in one space, which allows us to, in real time, see where the other person is at and ask questions or send a message, because you might not really want to get into an email because you need something right now, or you just have a quick phone call and you'd rather see the person. You're not just on the phone in a voice. You're looking each other in the face and really seeing the emotion behind these conversations. Where do we need to go from here?
When one of your subordinates, and you're giving a review or you're giving some of that in the moment feedback or coaching, what if you were in the mines, and you know, obviously you're pursuing your clinical psychology degree, what do you think some of your subordinates, what would they say about your leadership style and how you give and receive feedback?
I think that, hard to say what others would think, but my best guess would be that there's a lot of empathy involved in that. So I'm trying to not so much when I'm giving feedback, say, you've done something wrong and we need to fix this. I really earnestly try to understand what's going on that got us here, and then produce a conversation that's meaningful. So not just this is happening, fix it. It's why is this happening and how can we work together to fix this problem? And I learned early on, never present a problem without offering a solution. Yes. Right? We carry that lesson everywhere we go. And so I bring that to the table, and I ask my peers or my staff to do the same. Don't present me with this challenge. Tell me what you think we can do about it and how we can work together. But leave no man standing alone. We should all be in this together.
Right. Absolutely.
So I asked that question a little differently. What would you like people to say about you?
Way better way to ask that.
I would like for people to say that I am passionate about my organization and everyone involved, and that I want everyone to be the best that they can be. And that is what produces the outcomes for your organization. So that I care enough about the people that I work with to honestly want to make a difference.
Awesome. Okay. You started early. You've done a lot of leadership things that people way older than you would dream about. And you haven't gone into it in a straight line, which is beautiful because you take cross-pollination of ideas. What would you tell your younger self? If you were to go back in time, what would you tell your 22-year-old stepping into the first leadership role based on what you've learned today, to today?
Be patient. Be patient. And it seems kind of contradictory because I've always been on this fast track, but I never quite celebrated my victories as I achieved them. I think even in school, I could have straight A's, but I was focused on how I was going to get into college. I become the youngest supervisor in this mega company and doing all these great things. And I'm saying, well, when will I be a manager? How do I make more money? How do I do this? And back then in 2007, you know, if you were making $45,000 out of college, wow, that was really something. But in my mind, I'm saying, gosh, I need to be at like $80,000 or, you know, whatever number I had in my head. I just never felt like I had won. I had done enough. I was through. I could breathe for a little while and enjoy where I was. And now I find great peace and comfort in being happy where I'm at and yeah. Counting the blessings that I've been given for that day. Just taking each day as it comes. I mean, I'm working on my doctorate, so obviously I maintain goals.
Yeah.
But I'm not in my mind every day, okay, after I finish, I'm going to do this, and I need to open a clinic, and I have to... What will come, and I just need to celebrate my victories and stay focused on where I'm at, and that will produce the results that I desire.
So if I put that all together, you say something earlier... Willing to take risk, something about family, individual, and not losing yourself, right? Now you just added taking a breath and enjoying what you've achieved. So if I were to put that all together, it's good to drive for a goal. And especially people that are high performers, that want to be leader, have to go, go, go. Part of that go, go, go need to be a pause and appreciation before you go. And that a pause and appreciation doesn't mean that you are relenting. Like you said, you still have your goals. You still have time to enjoy your family. So if I were to put all together, what I'm hearing is leadership is taking risk, knowing who you are, who you want to serve, not losing yourself, and enjoying the ride.
I agree, except I would say one change. It's not knowing who you want to serve as to responding to the call for who you can serve.
Mm.
I like it.
I love it. Well, speaking of, you know, moving quick and how you've how you've been in kind of this pursuit mode, which I identify well with. Somebody once told me, you know, when you pray for patience, God's going to put you in a traffic jam. So you'll be careful what you wish for. But you've opened just since you've been at Basis, you guys have opened what, 15 campuses, and you're maintaining this A+, you know, rating across your district. What systems or values have mattered most in sustaining excellence at scale?
I think that's where we have this unique benefit. As a charter school, we have really high accountability standards with the state, and there are the metrics to meet because we're still a public school. But we have the flexibility to be uniquely us. And at BASIS, it is a high quality, rigorous education, and we serve the students who want to be there. So these kids come in and they're working hard. They're interested in what we do, and they know what it takes, that it's a lot of studying, a lot of work. Our families are very invested without the parents. These kids, I don't know, you got to keep them on track. I've been a BASIS parent, so it is a lot of work. So you just have
I am to a BASIS parent.
Dr. Gigi's a BASIS parent, so she knows.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so there's the connection.
There's our connection. And so you spend hours doing work with the kids. You're communicating with the staff. You're doing homework, studying. It's a constant. And from my seat, it's about marrying those worlds again. So as a parent, what's my lived experience and how can I make it better for our families and our students? And how do we just connect everybody together to keep moving on our mission, which is to offer these kids who don't really have a space elsewhere to fit in and find like-minded peers.
Yeah. Well, you just touched on, you know, being a mother and obviously that's contributed to your change in career paths. I mean, it's a natural kind of evolution. Myself as a father, the same. How did that season, being a new mother and having young children, kind of reshape your priorities and then your leadership style, if it did?
I started when my oldest was three, was when I was transitioning. She was turning three, and that's when I applied over to the other school and started there. And around that time, I found out I was hired, and then I found out I was pregnant with my second. And there was this moment of like, oh no, like I just started this job and I'm going to have to explain and then I have to leave again. But they were really gracious with me. Great, great team and very kind. But as I was growing it out, I was not in a leadership position. I was working in the front desk and helping with some compliance stuff and the growth. They only had one campus and were desiring to open more. So we were figuring out how the next steps were going. And that was one of the times when I was able to take a pause and just be in the moment and be in that career and focus on my family and not have the weight of that position. But after my youngest was born and I really started putting my nose back to the grindstone, it was, okay, here's what I want to do, because we can do these really great things. We can grow. We can offer this program to the families that are looking for it. We can be the best that is in this area. And all of those things, I just started getting really energized again. I had postpartum. I struggled with that. And so throwing myself into a career again and getting excited brought me back and pushed me further. So being a mom was a challenge, but it was also the thing that propelled me back into, okay, we've been steady for a long enough time. Now let's rock the boat a little bit and see where I can grow and how I can advocate for people like me again in a different way.
I love it.
So that brings me another question, right? I remember my dad was a principal, and I remember when I was about to go into high school, I prayed hard not to go to the school my dad was a principal at. I guess now I did not want that. Did not. So how do you balance leading an institution where your child is going? How does that work out?
It's hard, but we talk as a family about the expectations, and although my kids have crossed that boundary before with, my mom and having those moments in combative situations with staff, but they know that it's very separate. And when they were younger, I was in the schools. I was working on the campus where they were, which made that a lot harder. And they were younger, but now as they're older, you know, they understand this is my mom's job, and she steps into a room over there. She's got a very different hat on, and I'm leading a tour through the campus that they're at or whatever it is. There's just, we work very hard to remind them that this is the standard of separation that has to exist. But I expect from you the same as I would if this was a totally different school district.
That is that your the experience you're living. I'm living as the husband of a teacher whose daughter, our daughter, is in her grade and at her school. And this the struggle is real, man. Being in another teacher's class and then coming home and saying, well, this teacher did that, and then, you know, you're playing mom and then tried to separate, you know, mom of the student versus, you know, teacher or in my wife's case, teacher and employee, professional. It's a tough battle. Hey, Andrea. So, and we're getting close to wrapping up here, and one of the questions that I wanted to kind of touch on, kind of on some of the technology stuff is, and we know this, we have a private label called Loopspire, and my software, we do meeting management, project management, and performance management. We know education relies heavily on data, right? But students aren't data points. They might aggregate into some data points, but they themselves are not. How do you balance metrics with humanity when making tough calls, whether it's with students or teachers, or the business side of the district?
It really depends on what we're looking at, what's our situation. But I think specifically, it's always getting to the root cause. What's causing the discomfort? What's causing the problem? We have a lot of information. So we look at enrollment, for example, and why is it really great in this area and struggling a little bit in this one? What's going on over here? And directing your attention and your time to that, and pulling more data and looking at more. Is it the population change? Is it something about our school? What is that? And trying to balance that out. But as far as humanity, I think it's really about, again, being humble and staying in touch with it. I'm just a parent, right? I have this job that I do, but when I go home at night, I'm cooking dinner and eating with my kids, doing homework. We're doing all the same things. So as a parent, how do I view this situation? And as a student, how do I feel? And try to put myself in the position of the children even, and saying, what's my experience being in a classroom here? So all of those things coming together and willing to step outside of myself. And that's where we go with being humble. Don't always position yourself here. Just say, what is the experience of each person involved in it? And how do we move forward?
So how do you handle when those two roles have conflict?
The great
still want you.
I have an awesome support team, and I'm just honest. I'm a person. They're people. We all exist in this world together. And I'll say, okay, let's say, for example, it's something with one of my daughters, and we've been there. And I say, I'm really upset about it. It's a personal thing to me. This is my kid. So I need to tell you how I feel, and here's the situation, and I need you all to tell me, am I being reactive? Is this something that we need to fix? Where does the problem lie? And again, being open to those kind of responses. So hearing from my peers, like, and this might just be you. So we have to figure out something else. And I got to take that home and work with my child and change the situation.
Well, when your students and your teams and your child look, but your children look back, what do you hope they say about the way that you led?
That they're proud and they're inspired. I'm raising two young women, and it's a challenging time to be a child. Yeah. This is a world of some very cruel behaviors, and I would say over communication. We didn't have all of that. We grew up where there was a break in seeing people, and now there are really awesome things happening, but there's a lot of things that are tough, and I want them to see that it's not always easy, but if you persevere, there's nothing you can't do. You really just have to keep educating yourself and pushing forward.
That is the perfect way to end this time with you. And so, Andrea, thank you so much for being with us today. Just a huge thank you to you and for being on this episode of Between the Ones and the Zeros, and for reminding us that leadership isn't linear, right? It's not that straight line. And the growth doesn't just pause because responsibility increases.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
And thank you for showing us that ambition and empathy can coexist. Many times people don't think those two can coexist. And that leadership rooted in service creates space for others to thrive. Your story is a powerful reminder that leading well often means learning out loud.
Absolutely. And if today's conversation resonated with you, share it with someone navigating change, growth, or leadership in an unexpected season. Subscribe, leave us a review, and visit betweentheonesandthezeros.net for more episodes.
Until next time, lead with courage, stay curious, and remember that the most impactful leaders never stop learning. We'll see you soon on Between the Ones and the Zeros.